This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. We've all heard about schoolyard bullying and efforts to bring that under control, but there's another type of bullying that's just as big a problem, maybe even bigger. Workplace bullying. Unlike sexual harassment and discrimination based on race, workplace bullying isn't against the law, but it can be a major financial and liability risk for employers. Workplace bullying could be a coworker or a boss. They could take credit for other people's work or sabotage some people's work. They could be loud and boisterous, use a lot of just behavior in the workplace that's intimidating. It could lead to low performance in a workplace or even to a form of PTSD for the target. To help us understand workplace bullying, we have us with today Dr. Gary Namy. He's the director of the Workplace Bullying Institute, and Dr. Linda Kappas. She is a therapist and counselor who works with targets of workplace bullying. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So, and we want to hear from our listeners. Have you ever had a person at your workplace, someone who made your life just a living hell at the workplace? What did you do about it? We want to hear your stories. Give us a call, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. Dr. Gary Namy, what is a workplace bullying? How do you identify it?
Well, we identify it as repeated health-harming mistreatment. So it is. It goes beyond the pale. It's not tough management, and it comes from all sources. It can come from a higher-ranking individual, as it does 70% of the time, a coworker, or somebody bullying their way up the ladder. But it's got to be mistreatment that carries some degree of impact, something that is destroying the person's health, their confidence, or their economic status.
You say it's not a management style. It's not just a bad boss. This is somebody who is victimizing someone?
They are actually singling people out and engaging in a laser-focused campaign of interpersonal destruction. In other words, if they were tough, they could be tough, but they would be tough and consistent across every individual, and there would be a time for celebration at the end of, let's say, a big push for a deadline or a project ending. But bullying is a singling out of one or two targeted individuals at a time, and all the misery is dumped on their lives, and the other employees are free from it.
Do you think, let me ask you, Dr. Linda Kappas, are people, do you think some people are being bullied? They are in a workplace bullying situation, and they may not even know it? I mean, they're just used to it?
I don't know if I would say that they're used to it, but I think there are a lot of people who are caught in situations that are confusing to them. What I see in my practice a lot are people that come in that can't make sense out of the situation. And some of the symptoms are not being able to sleep, great deal of anxiety. Sometimes these people call in frequently, sick to work. But it seems to be kind of a systematic and targeted effort by the part of their coworkers, primarily by management.
But when I say used to it, maybe I meant to say they aren't aware that this is abuse, that you go to work and your boss does this to you and you're powerless to deal with it. And so maybe they don't feel like this is this, they have any kind of recourse to deal to say I don't have to deal with this.
I think people do feel kind of helpless and feel like they don't have a recourse to deal with it. I don't know if I'd say that they're used to it. They typically it kind of comes from nowhere. There doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Sometimes it's even within the parameters of the policies of the company. So it doesn't even seem to be sometimes something you could directly go and file a complaint about, for example.
So, Dr. Namy, how big of a problem is this?
It affects 35% of the American population directly. They either have been bullied or are currently being bullied. And Linda is absolutely right. The stunning deer in the headlights surprise shock of this paralyzes people. And they're not sure what it is. If they haven't experienced prior life abuse, and 33% of targets haven't, before, this is the first time to ever be abused. And I think Linda would agree with me that, to really understand what workplace bullying is that falls between the cracks in companies' policies and the state and federal laws, is consider this domestic violence where the abuser is on the payroll. And then you'll understand its severity, its pervasiveness, its threat to someone's health and identity. But the truth is, it's almost entirely legal. It's 4 times more prevalent than sexual harassment.
So you say it's legal, meaning that there are no laws being passed against it that would make workplace bullying illegal.
We don't yet have a law. We're working on it, and we have a Texas state coordinator, but none has been introduced yet in Texas. It's been introduced in 25 states, but none yet have passed. So you got to understand that in America, we're behind the rest of the industrialized nations. Canada has 6 provincial and 2 federal laws, but we don't have much going on here. That's correct. That's how Linda has to deal with her clients who come to her horribly savage sometimes and traumatized potentially. 30% of the folks get PTSD. And yet she has to tell them it does appear that this is kind of legal and that they can get away with it. That's very, very discouraging.
We do want to go to the phones to join the conversation. The number is 614-8980. Leslie is on the line. Leslie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Okay, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. When I heard the description of workplace bullying, it was like I went back in time. I had a situation so particularly like that, and my reaction was similar to what you're describing. I ended up going to a counseling service provided by the employer. I was in a state of anger constantly, and when I went there, she immediately said I had anxiety disorder, and when I described the situation, she told me that there's nothing I could do about it because they're willing to lie and you're not. I ended up quitting my job. I went through a long period of not being able to work. I didn't equate it with what had happened with my job. I thought it was horrible to be treated like that, to be talked to like that, and talked about like that. It took me a while to get over that.
And do you still feel that anger today? Or I guess all this brings out those memories.
Voice? Can you hear my voice?
Yeah, I can hear it.
I do. I didn't have any resolution. I even wrote a fairly detailed synopsis of what he'd been doing and sent it to the upper management and never heard a thing about it.
Well, Leslie,
I was also stealing from the company at the time.
Are you feeling okay now? Are you in a better place?
Yes.
That's good to hear. All right. Well, thank you for your call and thank you for your story. We're going to get the reaction to that story and hear from more of our callers in just a second. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 614-8980, 614-8980. We're talking about workplace bullies, workplace bullying, what protections you have. What are the signs that this is happening to you? Or maybe you are the bully and you don't even realize it. Stay tuned. This is The Source on KSTX. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about workplace bullying. With me today, Dr. Gary Namy. He's the director of the Workplace Bullying Institute. And Dr. Linda Kappa. She is a therapist and counselor. She works with targets of workplace bullying. We heard a call before we went to break. Someone telling us a very emotional story about how they're still traumatized by that event, even though it has passed them. So this is definitely goes to the core for people. Linda?
Absolutely. I think Leslie summed it up pretty well, and that's a lot of what I see too. You know that something's wrong. You feel powerless to do anything about it. What she did was something that I recommend, which is to document. It sounds like she did the best she could. Nothing was done in her case. But if you don't get your story out there, if you don't have anything specific with which to point to as to why you're feeling the way you do and how you've been treated, then it makes it very difficult. So at least if you're feeling stuck in that powerless place, documenting the situation with dates and specific information can kind of at least help you get your story out there.
All right, let's go back to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I worked for Dillard's not too long, well, so several years back, and the sales associates there are required to meet ridiculous quotas every day. One particular individual came in there and started stealing sales and mocking the associates as he did so, and Dillard's management not only tolerated it, they encouraged it. Now, what happened was he ended up harassing one of the associates, sexual harassment, and we all banded together and signed a petition to get him fired. But it took the sexual harassment complaint to really get things going. And, of course, we followed up. We found out where he was employed after he was let go at Dillard's, and we let that company know what had happened. So that was some payback there.
Wow. So, okay, Mark, thank you for that comment. Thank you for calling in. So Mark is talking about a supervisor at a shop where he worked at where they were doing this as a technique to drum up sales. Is that workplace bullying, or is that just being a bad boss? Dr. Namy?
No. If it's bullying that upset the people so much, and it led to harm. If it doesn't harm anyone, there's no harm, no foul, no matter how rough it is. But if indeed it does cause anxiety and stress-related health complications and psychological injury and sleeplessness and cardiovascular problems, all of that, you're darn right it's bullying. Mark's illustration is a good one to show that what it takes, Leslie couldn't get the employer to pay attention. It was probably she suffered at the hands of a woman, and therefore it was legally invisible. But Mark's case, they had some sexual harassment standards that were violated. That always makes the illegal version of discrimination and sexual harassment always makes the employer stand up and pay attention. So whenever there's, even if it's cruelty that is the overriding symptom, if you've got a kernel of discrimination in your situation, you tell the employer they are then obligated to act. So at least it gets their attention. But be prepared for retaliation if you file a complaint. That's all I have to warn people about there.
So, Dr. Namy, so you might want to follow up on that. Retaliation if you file a complaint. It sounds like, you're going to make your life worse, not better, by filing a complaint.
It does. The EEOC will tell you that the major category of complaints that are successful, even regarding illegal discrimination, are primarily retaliation. In other words, it's really hard to prove that based on your gender or sex, you were harassed, but it is much easier to show that once you file the complaint, that at a future event, harassment continues in response to the complaint. Bullies can't stand being exposed, and so they ratchet it up. And it turns out that those are most of the successful complaints are retaliation. Just the people need to know that's just part of how organizations operate. You're bringing them bad news. Like Linda said, you document, you take the case to the highest level person you can without emotion, but they will have to handle that in a very adult, dispassionate manner. They should be concerned about the bottom line impact of the company and everything else, but all too often the executive takes it very personally that you've attacked their friend Bob, and so then that's the problem, and that's how it rolls downhill and retaliation kicks in.
Back to the phones. Sherry is on the line. Sherry, you're on The Source.
Thank you. I worked for an entity here in San Antonio for over 28 years, and we had a new change in administration, and this woman, who actually, interestingly, I hired, thought that I wasn't doing any work. And so she, after about 6 months, she didn't see me because I was so busy with my working, that she actually, I came into my office one day and it was empty. And she had her secretary move my office to the office next to hers so she could keep an eye on me. And then she started adding jobs. So instead of one full-time job that was being paid for by the government, she also added a second job that no one had ever done two of. And then she tried to add a third job, at which point I just gave up and retired, but not without having to go to my doctor and being placed on antidepressants. And at one point, I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. My husband was beside himself because he said he never saw me in such a state where I'd come home from work every day crying. So it's taken me well over 2 years to get over this. And I was told I should file a lawsuit, but truthfully, I was in no mental condition to be able to file anything.
Sherry, I'm sorry to hear all that. I'm glad you're doing better now. I'm sorry you had to retire from there.
Well, I was sorry I retired. I thought I would work another couple of years and retire gracefully instead of just having to leave.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Let me ask you, Linda, I mean, you treat people who have gone through this and they've had horrific experiences. I got an email from a person who's telling me about their experience. They're saying that they put on 75 pounds. They've had a heart attack. They've run antidepressant drugs. So, I mean, this is a physical attack, even though they're using emotionals, but the emotions to in power to get to people. They're suffering a physical reaction to it. How do you treat that?
Absolutely. I think one of the things to, you know, initially it's just to hear the person's story. Just talking about it sometimes can help because you feel like there's nobody out there that will listen and really hear what it is that you're going through. Helping people deal on a day-to-day basis with their anxiety level overall, a referral perhaps to a psychiatrist to help them if their depression is one of the symptoms of this kind of endeavor. I mean, it becomes this very systematic, targeted way for somebody to get somebody kind of caught off center. And the idea of not being able to withstand the retaliation keeps a lot of people from following through with things. So having an outlet to go and talk about it, learning some ways of kind of keeping yourself centered, that you could, in fact, find another job if you needed to, sometimes gives people sort of that emotional relief that maybe I could do some things to illuminate my story with people that can make a difference. And if not, then I'll strategically change my job and look for something else.
But Dr. Gary Namy,
David, I want to add about injustice. What I heard in Sherry's talk, everything Linda said is true, but the additional part is almost every case is one of injustice. The person, they stay too long because they're hoping that the person will change or the company will come around understanding them, you know, and she suffered for so long. It's all about injustice. Why should Sherry have been made to lose her career and retire early? And that stays with you. And so you do have to go see a psychotherapist like Linda. And so you do need to look into potential anti-anxiety medications and the rest. But somehow you've got to find your pound of flesh, if you will. And it's not going to happen in court. She was very wise to say, Sherry, the caller, she wasn't ready to file a lawsuit. It's best to not file a lawsuit most of the time, given the additional emotional strain, plus the fact that it keeps your situation alive until the case is totally resolved, and that can take years. So it prevents people from moving on, and it's so very, very hard. Sherry's case is pretty illustrative.
It seems like people are very vulnerable in the workplace because your job is very much part of your identity. And when that comes under attack and you feel injustice there, it really does go right to, you know, your center.
It does. It's your identity. And some of the worst bullies use behind-the-closed-door tactics to try and erode your confidence and your competence. They actually – there's so much research out there, which we teach in all of our work and our writings. There are so many that go in there and actually try and redefine who you are. So they break down the boundary. Look, it's just like spousal abuse. So they're telling you you're worthless, no one will love you. Same thing in the workplace. They'll take the most competent worker and shock them with, you're incompetent. Someone's always new in a bullying situation, David. It's either a new supervisor, a newly promoted first person from within the group. The target is new to the company, to the group, to the boss. And then for unspecified, unknown, and unwarranted reasons, that hatred is there, and then the campaign begins. And it usually does not involve just the bully. The bully will quickly mobilize the coworkers, and then it becomes many against one. And there's they feel trapped, and it has nothing to do with their strengths. Our research shows that they're actually fairly independent people. They are technically skilled. They pose a threat. They pose a threat to the bully, and instead of learning from that skilled worker, they try and take them out.
So real quickly, Dr. Namy, you said there's legislation being proposed, but how could you craft legislation to protect someone against something that is so insidious and hard to, you know, actually define that way?
It's defined as basically it follows our WBI definition, and it's very friendly toward employers because the high threshold is that an employee, in order to file a suit against an employer, has to demonstrate severe health harm. So that standard's not always met. In most cases, it can be, but not always. And then they have to go find their own attorney. And listen, it's a tricky business. But when you read sexual harassment statutes, the codes themselves, they're actually a lot more ambiguous than people think. But we think we've got a fairly well-crafted law. Keep your eye on New York State and Massachusetts in 2014 to see if anything big happens, and maybe we'll get it introduced in Texas someday.
All right, so Dr. Linda Kappas, you're a therapist, counselor here in San Antonio, working with workplace bullying. Just real quickly, what's something that people can do? I mean, they can reach out to you and others or people in their workplace of faith to try and get some comfort?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really hopeful about this is just illuminating that and knowing that there are people out there that can listen to you and know what you're talking about. It can help you.
Telling your story is a big first step.
Absolutely.
Dr. Linda Kappas, Dr. Gary Namy, Director of Workplace Bullying Institute, thank you for being on The Source today. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.